In March, the Food and Drug Administration approved an antidepressant nasal spray, Spravato, and its, quote, breakthrough therapy after fast-tracking the process. Within a few days, they had a big buyer, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs. But some in the medical community are skeptical of Spravato. The Public Citizens Health Research Group summed up their concerns in a February letter to the FDA. In it, they wrote, quote, in addition to the lack of substantial evidence of benefit, there is clear evidence that the drug has serious risks of harm. Dr. Eric Turner used to work for the FDA as a reviewer, and now he's an associate professor at Oregon Health and Science University. Dr. Turner, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So the concerns around the FDA concerns around Spravato are what exactly?
Broadly, they can be broken into concerns about efficacy, how well the drug works, and safety. And my concerns are primarily focused on efficacy. I haven't gotten into the topic of safety particularly, but that's a whole nother set. So I might have some thoughts on the efficacy side of things. One issue, probably the most, if you use the word breakthrough in another sense, is that the FDA made a breakthrough in the way that in the criteria that it uses to approve drugs. Typically for an antidepressant, they've needed two short-term trials that were positive, and meaning that they were statistically superior to a placebo in order to get that drug approved. But in this case, they had done three trials of that design, short-term trials, but only two of them were negative and one was positive. But they accepted that one positive trial was enough in this case. They were able to tried to make up for it by taking a second trial of a different type, which is a bit questionable, actually.
Let's talk about that, because the FDA is supposed to be an independent regulator of drugs. You used to work there. This drug, as we mentioned, was quote-unquote fast-tracked. I'm wondering, are you concerned about how quickly this drug made it through the FDA, and would you vouch for the independence of the FDA in evaluating this drug?
Well, the fast-track designation is used for, well, they gave it a breakthrough designation because they thought that it was it held out great promise. We have a condition for which there is very little in the way of viable treatments, namely treatment-resistant depression. So it could be argued and is argued that we have an unmet need, but that by merely calling it a breakthrough kind of sets people up, in my opinion. It sets up a bias that people are more likely to look upon it positively than not. So that's one biasing factor. But you asked about the independence of the FDA, and I can't speak to this particular drug or this example, but I might mention that the fact that the FDA does receive quite a bit of funding from the pharmaceutical industry through so-called user fees. Just reading an article recently that back when the whole program of user fees got started, it was about 35% of the FDA's budget. Indeed, when I worked there, my salary came from user fees. But now it's doubled. It's about 71%, according to this article. So when you're getting that much money from the industry that you're supposed to regulate, it raises questions about the independence.
Dr. Eric Turner is an associate professor at Oregon Health and Science University. Thank you, doctor.
Thanks for having me.
ProPublica reporter Isaac Arnsdorf has been reporting on the ties between people in Trump's Mar-a-Lago circle and the VA. Isaac, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So in your reporting, you talk about the Mar-a-Lago trio. Who are they and what sort of influence do they have at the VA?
So this was a very unusual situation where there was a doctor, a lawyer, and an entertainment executive who, for much of the first 2 years of the administration, had sweeping influence over policy and personnel at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Even though they didn't really have any experience or expertise having to do with veterans or health policy, but what they did have was a personal connection to the president by virtue of meeting at his club in Palm Beach, Florida.
Now, Isaac, we understand that President Trump reportedly pushed the VA to buy Spravato in bulk. Can you confirm that? And if so, do we know why?
I mean, you can just look at his public comments in March at the White House with the VA secretary, where he was extremely enthusiastic about the drug and about wanting it to be delivered in the VA health system. You know, obviously that idea came from somewhere, and currently that's a bit of a mystery in terms of who presented that idea to the president. Now, with a company as big and influential as Johnson & Johnson, you could imagine a lot of ways where that could have happened. The CEO of Johnson & Johnson has had dinner with Trump directly. But there's also an interesting connection that runs through Mar-a-Lago, which is that back in 2017, when these three associates were facilitating a lot of conversations and organizing a lot of meetings with outside executives, one of them was with Johnson & Johnson. This was in April of 2017. And one of the people there was an executive from the exact unit of Johnson & Johnson that markets this drug.
Now, of course, for those listening, Johnson & Johnson is the company that makes Spravato. And in light of this reporting on Spravato, Isaac, you did have some follow-up questions for Johnson & Johnson. What were those and what was their response?
Well, I asked them, since I had the record of this meeting where the relevant executive was present, I asked them if, you know, if this was, it would make sense if maybe this was one of the topics of conversation. Johnson & Johnson said that that particular phone call in April of 2017 was focused on something else, which was a publicity campaign that they were running on suicide prevention. But they didn't answer, well, what about follow-up conversations? And just, well, if it wasn't that, then how did this idea get in front of the president to get him to be so supportive of this drug? And that's a question that Johnson & Johnson or the White House haven't answered yet.
And I'm just wondering, in your reporting and your experience, is it unusual for the CEO of a pharmaceutical company as big as Johnson & Johnson to sit down and have dinner with the president of the United States?
That dinner, my understanding is that dinner was in a context with a number of other executives. It was one of these kind of business council type things. You know, certainly in this administration in particular, I've reported on, and a lot of other reporters have done really good work where, you know, kind of trying to trace back something surprising that the president said and trying to backward induce where that idea came from and who was exercising some unusual access or influence to put that idea in front of the president so that he would say that.
Isaac Arensdorf is a reporter with ProPublica. Thank you, Isaac.
Thank you.